Okay, so picture this. It's the 1840s, France, and things aren't exactly calm.
Not calm at all. They're in the thick of not one, but two revolutions, one right after the other. Talk about chaotic.
Right, total upheaval. And out of this whole mess comes, well, Louis Napoleon, a name that probably didn't ring any bells back then.
No one really saw him coming, at least not at first.
But he ends up seizing power, I mean, really grabbing it, and sets up an empire.
An empire, indeed. And that's exactly what we're diving into today, how this political nobody managed to pull off one of the most improbable power grabs in history.
And the really cool thing is we get to understand this whole drama through the eyes of someone who was right there in the thick of it, Alexis de Tocqueville.
Ah, Tocqueville, now there's a sharp mind. He wasn't just some bystander, you know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely not. For those who might not know, Tocqueville was a bit of a big deal. A political theorist famous for his book Democracy in America. But what's often overlooked is that he was completely absorbed by what was happening in France in the 1840s.
As well he should be. I mean, talk about a time of upheaval. And he wasn't just observing from the sidelines either. Tocqueville was deeply involved in the creation of the Second Republic.
Right. Got to set the stage here, folks. That's the republic that sprung up after the July monarchy fell apart in 1848.
And Tocqueville, well, he was right there helping to draft their constitution. He was really pushing for a system with a two-chamber legislature, much like what we see in the United States. You know, that whole checks and balances idea.
He wanted to make sure no single person, no matter how charismatic or ambitious, could amass too much power. But here's the thing. They're trying to build this republic, this democracy, with the legacy of Napoleon Bonaparte looming over everything.
Ah, yes, the original Napoleon. Now there's a figure who casts a long shadow. I mean, even decades after his death, he was a force to be reckoned with. A brilliant military mind, no doubt, led France to some incredible victories.
Right, victories that still resonated with people. But on the other hand, he was also a ruler who, well, let's just say he wasn't shy about centralizing power.
Exactly. He wasn't exactly known for sharing power.
So you've got this really complicated situation emerging, a brand new republic trying to find its footing, and a population wrestling with the legacy of Napoleon. Some people saw him as the answer to their problems, the kind of strong leader they needed.
And that's the million-dollar question, isn't it? What did Napoleon represent to the French people in the mid-1800s? Was he a hero? A villain? A bit of both?
I mean, it's not exactly a simple answer.
Not at all. It's important to remember that Napoleon's image, even in death, was incredibly powerful. He embodied this idea of national glory and military strength, something that many people, particularly those who longed for stability, found deeply appealing.
It's like he became this almost mythical figure.
Absolutely. And in 1840, the July monarchy, maybe trying to tap into some of that Napoleon magic, decided to bring his remains back to France from St. Helena, you know, where he'd been exiled.
What a moment that must have been, his remains arriving back on French soil.
It was a calculated move, for sure. They were trying to connect themselves to Napoleon's legacy. We're part of this grand story, too, that kind of thing. But instead of propping up the monarchy, it actually sparked an even bigger wave of fascination with Napoleon.
So they basically just threw fuel on the fire.
Precisely.
And right in the middle of all this is Alexis de Tocqueville, who, shall we say, had some strong opinions about Napoleon's style of leadership.
Oh, he did. Tocqueville had seen firsthand how fragile democracy could be. He believed that Napoleon, for all his military genius, had ultimately damaged the idea of a free society. He'd concentrated too much power in the hands of one man.
Right, too much power in one person's hands. That was Tocqueville's big fear. And as we'll see, that fear was about to be put to the test. So how does someone go from, a political afterthought to the leader of a nation? I mean, it's not like he just sent out a bunch of strongly worded letters.
Now, this is where it gets really good. See, Louis Napoleon, he had this uncanny ability to understand what made the French people tick. Remember that whole Napoleon mania we talked about? The way the July monarchy accidentally brought it roaring back to life?
By bringing Napoleon's remains back to France, yeah, it kind of backfired on them.
Big time. And all that longing for the old empire, for a strong leader, it was still simmering beneath the surface.
So the timing was perfect for, well, a Bonaparte to make a comeback, even
Yeah.
if it wasn't the Bonaparte everyone expected.
Now you're getting it. And this is where our boy, Louis Napoleon, really steps into the spotlight. The Second Republic holds its first presidential election in December 1848. And guess who wins by a landslide?
Let me guess. the author currently chilling in exile.
You got it. Louis Napoleon becomes President Bonaparte. Can you imagine the look on Tocqueville's face?
I bet he was eating his words, the ones about the vulgar political adventurer.
Oh, I'm sure. But here's the thing. Louis Napoleon, he doesn't just ride his uncle's coattails, you know? Mm-hmm. He starts making some savvy moves, forms a cabinet. And get this, he offers Tocqueville the position of foreign minister.
Wait, what? Seriously, he wants to work with the guy who basically thinks he's a threat to democracy.
It seems crazy, right? But that's Louis Napoleon for you, always full of surprises.
So what does Tocqueville do?
He takes the job. I mean, can you imagine being a fly on the wall in those meetings?
What a wild situation.
Yeah.
But it couldn't have lasted long, right?
Yeah.
Two completely opposite personalities trying to rebuild a nation.
It didn't. Tocqueville was only foreign minister for a few months, but in that short time, he got a close-up look at the real Louis Napoleon. And what he saw, well, it fascinated him.
What do you mean? What was he like?
Tocqueville actually wrote about this in his memoirs. He describes Louis Napoleon as charming, even affectionate at times, but he also saw a ruthlessness, a deep ambition that was always there, just below the surface.
It's like he was two different people.
Exactly. And that's what made him so dangerous. He understood the power of image, of playing to the desires of the people, even if it meant sidelining the very institutions that Tocqueville was trying to build.
He was playing a different game altogether.
Yeah.
So what happens next? Because I have a feeling this is where things start to unravel. So he's got his finger on the pulse of the people. He's got Tocqueville watching his every move. What's his next move? How does he go from elected president to, well, Emperor Napoleon III?
Well, you have to hand it to the guy. He was a master of seizing the moment. And in this case, the moment was approaching fast. See, the constitution that Tocqueville had poured his heart and soul into, the one for this brand new Second Republic, it had this little clause, Article 45, that limited the president to a single term.
The best laid plans, right? I'm sensing this is going to be good.
It's almost too perfect, isn't it? Here's yeah. Tocqueville, dead set against a Bonaparte dynasty 2.0, and he ends up accidentally handing Louis Napoleon the perfect excuse for a power grab.
So the clock's ticking. What happens?
Well, as you can imagine, things start heating up as Louis Napoleon's term is coming to an end. The National Assembly is in chaos, totally divided over what to do about Article 45. Some want to amend it, let Louis Napoleon run for a second term. Others are terrified of what he might do if they don't.
I can only imagine the tension, the backroom deals, the sense that something's got to give.
It was a powder keg ready to blow. And Louis Napoleon, ever the opportunist, he sees his chance. December 2nd, 1851, he launches a coup d'etat, shuts down the National Assembly, takes control of the army, the whole nine yards.
And just like that, the Second Republic is dot over.
Just like that. A year later, Louis Napoleon, through a combination of political maneuvering and popular support, crowns himself Emperor Napoleon III.
Wow. Tocqueville must have been beside himself. Mm. All that work, all that worry about another Napoleon, and it happened right under his nose.
It's one of the great ironies of history, isn't it? Tocqueville dedicated his life to understanding democracy, its strengths, its weaknesses. And yet, he was completely outmaneuvered by a man he initially dismissed as a lightweight.
It really makes you think, you know, about the law of unintended consequences. How even the most well-intentioned actions can sometimes have the opposite effect.
It certainly does, and it reminds us that history isn't some neat and tidy story. It's messy, unpredictable, and sometimes it repeats itself in the most unexpected ways.
Well, folks, there you have it. The story of Louis Napoleon, the nephew who learned from his uncle's mistakes and managed to build not just an empire, but a lasting legacy. And it all unfolded against the backdrop of a fledgling republic, with Alexis de Tocqueville caught right in the middle of it all. It makes you wonder, what would Tocqueville say today about the state of democracy in our world? Something to ponder, wouldn't you say?